3/4 of people in that category aren't absorbed into the labor market. Obviously, some of them are studying and some of them are still being supported, but that's quite concerning. The president indicated that he had deliberations with the National Economic Development and Labour Council, as well as organised labour, business units in South Africa, and various other stakeholders. And they came up with priorities, specifically in the mining sector, but also more generally, and one of those is youth employment. So there's also, I mean, one of the medium-term strategic framework priorities that Home Affairs has to focus on is the skilled and capable workforce. And in that sense, it's got two responsibilities, both filling vacancies within its own structure, and then also allowing people to get documentation so they can get their own jobs, so they can access the labor market legally. And then the second priority is the recruiting of scarce skills, or providing documentation, therefore, to stimulate development and related job creation. So there's been a lot of presentations or a lot of research we've seen that indicates that actually bringing scarce skills in can stimulate job creation. The department has a youth development program under its human resources strategy, and it's on one of the top five HR priorities. And the priority that relates to youth employment is transformation and change. And that includes issues of gender and disability as well, but there's also a focus specifically on youth development. One of the minister's performance agreement one of the specific performance agreement components for the minister is that you must provide ID documents to all South Africans 16 years old and above. And this is all the more important because if you look at the census data again, the age group 15 to 19 has a very low absorption rate, again, partially because they're still at home. But those of them who are looking for employment need identity documents in order to be able to access that. So the sooner they get their documents, the better. In terms of the department's performance on this matter in previous years, they prioritized 1,500 positions for the 2012-13 year. And as of the second quarter report, which they gave us at the end of last year, they'd only filled 46% of those. And they'd already committed in the previous year to fill all vacant posts within 6 months. And so they're falling behind in that regard. And at the end of the third quarter, the DH is behind in that they've only filled, at the end of the third quarter, yeah, it's only filled only half of its position, so it should have filled 3/4 of its position, even if it hadn't already committed to filling them in 6 months. So they're significantly behind in filling positions. This has been confirmed by the oversight reports and the observations of members in the various provinces, where we've seen that a significant percentage of the offices are understaffed. The presidency also brought out a scorecard on the national departments in 2012, and the DHA human resource capacity and competency fell way below the public service average, particularly on managing diversities, which is where youth and disability and all those things fall in. So they even rated themselves as performing badly in that regard. And in terms of stimulating growth and job creation through importing scarce skills, this is kind of dependent on amendments to both the refugee and immigration legislation, but we haven't seen the regulations to those implemented yet. So it's still kind of in limbo. They haven't brought about the new scarce skills list as a result of not having implemented the regulations yet. Education was the second priority. The president mentioned wanting to make it an essential service, not in the sense of not being able to strike, but rather that it's far more serious than has been given attention before. The Department of Home Affairs has become a little notorious for its lack of service orientation, and a lack of security as well, particularly at the borders, and lack of professionalism. This is in terms of the Public Service Commission. The former minister was then prompted to urge the creation of a cadre of Home Affairs officials who are versatile, committed, humble, disciplined, and various other good qualities. In order to build the capacity of employees and management, they conducted a skills audit. This was done in 2010, and didn't identify the needs. And the following have been identified as the main priorities. I'm not going to go through all of them, but those are the main education or like skills that, that need to be improved on. So in 2011, they established the Learning Academy, as members will all be aware. They recruited 30 training specialists. And they're trying to reposition the department as an employer of choice. And they also got that private sector award for being a the most improved employer in 2012. This also includes the process of like restructuring and rebranding. The department indicated that they want to expand the Learning Academy to incorporate a research program, population, citizenship and migration studies, and to broaden the current horizons, which is just a general qualification in Home Affairs skills, including these mentioned above. The National Certificate of Home Affairs Services has been set up in collaboration with the business school as well, where they also have a management leadership development program. So they got a number of initiatives in place, and it's a question of really monitoring the progress on those initiatives and keeping a track on what they aspire to do in the coming year, which is to broaden the horizons of the Training Academy. And the Presidential Remuneration Commission, although it's not a big emphasis in the speech itself, could have some implications for the Home Affairs, because they, for a number of years, have been experiencing significant staff shortages. And part of the reason for the staff shortages is they struggle to retain their staff, to keep them within the department. Particularly senior management positions, because there's a scarcity a shortage of skills. So there's a lot of competition between the government departments and also between government departments and the private sector. That said, there's also budget shortages, so only 55% of the approved positions on the DHA establishment have actually been funded. So only half of them are funded, and they're not even the funded ones are filled. Again, the presidential scorecard for last year indicated that in terms of staff retention, Home Affairs was even lower than the already low rating of the public service in general, scoring only 1 out of 4 versus the 2 out of 4 that other departments got, or the average for government departments. So the DHA needs to make a strong case for prioritized remuneration review, given the need to reduce the continuous backlog in the immigration and civic services, which have been going on for a number of years, and the negative impact this is having on attracting scarce skills and citizens accessing the job market and social services. So basically, it's a recommendation that can be made to the Department of Home Affairs that they must kind of try to get their foot in the door on the presidential remuneration review, because they're struggling to keep positions and they're struggling, and it's having a negative impact on the economy. And also on service delivery. The department has in the past couple of years used a significant number of contract workers as well. What this also means is that there's a high turnover rate, so they get people in for the short term, usually at higher salaries. So that's the only way they can afford the higher salaries, and then a lot of them are laid off once their contracts expire. So this is a very high turnover rate, like 33% in 2010-11. It has gone down in 2011-12 though. So a review of the remuneration of full-time employees to attractive levels could avert the need to rely on so much contract work. Continued emphasis on job creation also means that they need to expedite recruitment processes. Could also have fallen in the first category of youth employment, and that there was a need for either decentralizing the recruitment process so that provincial departments could recruit at a higher level and not be as dependent on head office. In addition, they need to be, we can also provide motivation for additional budget to fill vacancies in the DHA because they've been understaffed for a number of years. So we could do this through the budget review recommendation reports or through business actions with the department. Okay, well, I think through that. Okay, for example, this is an example of the kind of skills that might, or the skills review that could apply to home affairs, is that the amendment to the Refugee Act meant the establishing of a refugee appeals authority, which is like a new body to deal with the backlog in refugee and asylum appeals. But these positions will have to be like highly skilled and particularly experienced legal qualifications. And in order to attract enough of these legal qualifications and to retain them, they'll have to be paid at a sufficient level. And another recurring problem in terms of skills is the government printing works shortage of artisans. So they train the artisans, and then the artisans end up going to the private sector because the private sector pays better. And the process of trying to get a special dispensation from the Department of Public Service and Administration has taken a very long period of time, and perhaps this could be fast-tracked through the remuneration review under the presidency, or perhaps even circumvented, so they could try do it another way to pay the artisans better. Given the importance of the public, the government printing works. The representation of women in half of all decision-making structures. Okay, this is a Millennium Development Goal, which the country has signed on to, which we need to achieve by 2014. And there's also like public service administration guidelines on how to do this, and Home Affairs has to report on these regularly. Basically, it's the history of our commitments. The annual report for 2011-12 indicates that out of 219 senior positions, 111, or 50%, so over 50% were women, and out of top management positions, 6 or a third were women. Thus, the department is well on track in terms of senior management and making progress in terms of top management, with both women women as both minister and deputy minister. So we're doing actually quite, the department's doing quite well in terms of gender equity. But they can improve in terms of senior management. They do have an employment equity manager who's keeping a track on things and obviously doing quite well. And then there's just a list of the highlights for the employment equity. So these are the kinds of things we could keep a track on. When looking at equity, and it's achieving a 50-50 in all management positions, recruiting females at middle management so they can go up to senior management, prioritizing women in training, and just in terms of general equity, promoting people with disability, and making sure that they make quarterly reports. Fighting corruption, again, has been mentioned a number of times. DHA has been quite active on this in the past year or two. They did a comprehensive baseline study on which they presented to us in September last year. Their fraud prevention plan was approved by the former DG in 2004. At that time, counter-corruption was a chief directorate, and now it's been elevated to a branch level, which is far more clout. And they've produced a revised corruption and fraud prevention plan, but we haven't seen it yet. And they recognize that counter-corruption and fraud prevention as a key priority. And one of the ways in which corruption is trying to be prevented, which was a specific emphasis in the State of the Nation address last year, was through the use of online verification. And there's two impacts on that. Internally, it has improved turnaround time for verification processes, which means less time to for fraudulent activity. And direct verification from the Office of Application for Business Processes, namely passport reissue, marriage and birth certificate. So you can see who's doing the application and when they did it and now. Anybody who amended it or intervened in the process. So you can hold people directly accountable. Externally, there's been a reduction in referrals from other departments because they get access to the information directly. Banks can verify the identification of clients. There's less financial fraud. And stolen IDs can be identified because they can use biometrics to make sure that the person whose ID it is is the person whose ID it is. Yes, and I mentioned that. In the future, they're also considering exploring online verification in other commercial ventures, whether it's companies or things like that. So there's a broader application for the counter corruption of initiatives of Home Affairs in the country as a whole. Okay, social cohesion kind of emerged out of last year. There was a kind of emphasis on cultural heritage and liberation heritage, and hence there was a summit on social cohesion, which is focusing on building socially inclusive, caring, and a proud nation. And the president indicated that eminent South Africans had been appointed as social cohesion advocates to promote social cohesion. Now, social cohesion basically is like a sense of Ubuntu, uniting towards a common goal, recognizing our common humanity in meaningful ways and involving meeting basic human needs, including decent shelter, food, meaningful work, and things like that. So it's more kind of a subjective thing, but there was a specific social cohesion campaign spearheaded by the Department of Arts and Culture called South Africa at Heart. And it was also trying to encourage these values of diversity, inclusivity, values, and access. And it's basically, it guarantees the rights of every South African as well as foreigners. And as a diverse country with a shared heritage, diversity actually encourages richness and strength. And so what we've seen recently in our immigration and refugee policy debate last week was that various role players recommended a more comprehensive refugee and immigrant integration campaign. Such campaigns or advocacy should include the benefits of immigration and the need to protect certain vulnerable groups. The DHAN and its stakeholders integrating or assisting in such issues in the broader social cohesion programs of government. So if they make this kind of public awareness campaign about foreigners and the need for foreign skills part of the social cohesion debate, it could have more clout and more influence. And also perhaps save money by not duplicating initiatives. So we've narrowed this down to a couple of points which Parliament could focus on. The theme for Parliament in 2013 is socioeconomic development through oversight and public participation. And so there's basically one or two of these recommendations for each of the 6 points I've recommended, that I've picked out of the State of the Nation address. Firstly, Parliament will need to continue monitoring the adherence of all sections of the department in terms of filling vacancies, particularly of the youth in age groups 20 to 25. Improvements of processes at head office to expedite the recruitment process are also still needed, particularly in the provinces, and decentralization of recruitment to more senior level positions in provinces still needs to be considered. The outputs and functioning of the DHA Learning Academy and the expansion of its courses to include migration research and citizenship can be overseen. The DHA must be encouraged to submit applications to the Presidential Review Commission for high turnover and high skilled unfilled positions. The impact on the budget of the DHA and its entities, however, must also be monitored to see that it has a commensurate increase in service delivery and the filling of vacancies. So is giving more money going to actually improve service and actually get them to recruit more people? That's what needs to be monitored. Make a strong case for prioritized remuneration review given the need to reduce the continued backlog in both immigration and civic services. The DHN still needs to brief Parliament on its revised corruption and fraud prevention plan, which is quite a comprehensive document from what I understand. And the participation and input of the Minister of Home Affairs and the DHA in the social cohesion initiative of the government, with particular emphasis on improving perceptions of and integration of refugees and skilled migrants, must be recommended or monitored. The next section just covers progress made on the recommendations on the State of the Nation address from last year. I'll leave that for you to look at yourself. I think I'm not going to go into detail with that, although there's not much left. I'll just mention the highlights from last year. The one was improving border communications, border crossings, advocating for DHA infrastructure, improving national security through fraud detection, updating a needed scarce skills list, and job creation through meaningful economic transformation. This is a report received mostly from the Department of Home Affairs themselves, asking them how they've made progress on these issues. And they said to date, 45 ports of entry have implemented the electronic movement control system, and the rest of the ports are going to be completed in 2013. Online verification or biometric fingerprint verification has also been rolled at the airport, which is the first airport to get this, or the first port of entry to get this. Advocating for improved DHA infrastructure. So nothing really happened because of no major infrastructure project happened due to limitations with the Department of Public Works. But the infrastructure at the seaport has started being implemented. So an analysis was done, but there's still a lack of coordination between the various government departments at the seaport, so that's inhibiting implementation of these infrastructure projects. The Cape Town Harbour was a pilot project for the one-stop operation center, so like intergovernmental port control, and will be operational in the first quarter of the 2013 financial year. So that could be an easy oversight trip if the committee wanted or had some short time for oversight trip to see what the developments are for Cape Town Harbour. Continued fight against corruption. Well, basically, this is just a list of all the initiatives that they've taken in the past year, and that they have ongoing initiatives, which I've already mentioned because it's a continued theme for this year. So that's basically for your information purposes to assist in the upcoming debate and also in the continued oversight during the year. Job creation through meaningful economic transformation and economic growth, inclusive growth. The department was responsible for filling 1,100 positions in 2011-12, and as September 2011, mid-year of the financial year, only 55% of these are filled. So in the previous year, they were also lagging behind on filling positions, and they haven't made significant progress in that regard this year. There was also need for an organized skill transfer mechanism because of the high turnover rate and the fact that so many people resign. There needs to be some mechanism for institutional memory so that the people who resign are required to train or transfer their skills to those who remain. And that hasn't been implemented in the department yet. Oh yes, another point with the job creation was that they were also falling behind on their disability targets, having only filled 0.8% of their staff capacity with disabled persons, falling short of 2% target. It's an ongoing theme as well in the department. Okay, so basically that's my overview of what I've expected from the State of the Nation address. Hope it's useful tonight.
Thank you, Ian, so much. Honourable members, that was the input from Tate Adam unpacking the SONA. I have noticed on FANA when courses, but Adam, you did not touch on the National Development Plan.
Oh yes, so
as well as the prevention and combating of trafficking of persons bill, because we haven't actually also looked at that bill, which is still in the NCOP, as to how does the bill affect us. Mm-hmm. Also, how does the NPA impact on us as the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs? Can you maybe raise on that if maybe you have something on that? Mm-hmm. I noticed the Honorable Fana Wenkosi, Honorable De Freitas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I apologize for being a few minutes late. On page 4, may I say I found this a very interesting report and I learned a few things which I wasn't aware of. Maybe our research could explain to me. In the first paragraph on page 4, he says 55% of the approved position of the DSAs had actually been funded. Right. Then, in the third paragraph, he says, in addition, the department reported 1,035 posts filled additional to their approved establishment. Excuse me, I'm sorry. So, I don't quite understand that. And then, what Madam Chair is very interesting, obviously immigration is a separate subject which we can discuss later, where he talks of harness, I found it very interesting because I asked the officials dealing with harness last year how many fingerprints they had captured, and they had 30 million. According to our researcher, as of 27th January, there were 35 million. Now, that's huge progress, Madam Chair, I think. And I think this harness system is a huge benefit to our country and to the department, if one thinks of what it's doing. And I just hope we can... I just think we as a committee should try to support harness as much as possible. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just that disparity, which I can't quite work out on page 4.
First of all, thanks very much to our researcher who's done an excellent job again. Just a few comments and questions. There's mentioned here also with regards youth employment, the issuing of ID books and in particular to the tricks and people who are looking for employment and so forth, that might be something to throw into the pot. Also on the next page, also with youth employment, looking at the DHA's relationship with, for example, departments like labour and economic development, linking up to their objectives so that these goals can be met. And then also what I want to suggest, Chair, is that we perhaps create perhaps a spreadsheet or something of these points that Mrs. Feminist put here here and others that I think should be included, and perhaps monitor it on a monthly basis on our committee as an idea, where we see what progress is being done by the department on these different points, so that we make sure that we, if you like, keep the department on their toes, but also make sure these objectives are being met, the presidents have set us, and also for the important economic development and growth that our country needs so much. So it's a suggestion that perhaps have a kind of spreadsheet and monitor it on a monthly basis, for example, because the document does talk about last year's State of the Nation address. I presume it's on page 8, you mean 2012, not 2011, so I'm sure it's innocent mistake, unless I'm mistaken. I'll just check if I have any other questions. And that was, on fighting corruption, I'm suggesting on that spreadsheet, I'm suggesting the reason is because they talk about, the corruption is, would be good to see as a committee, where are they in the anti-corruption fight? How successful have they been? And so forth. And again, it would be a great way to perhaps just track how is corruption doing. We may find that a particular month corruption may actually go up, and then it would be interesting to find out why that is the case, what is it, what's caused it, and in knowing the causes, we can then create solutions for it or monitor it. So that's another suggestion of mine, and then I just want to check. And again, also in this tracking, I'm suggesting that perhaps the targets that the departments have set be included there, so that we see where are we in relation to a target that's been set by the department. And then last but not least is, I'd love to know what happened to Adam's arm. Thank you.
Mine is that we need to, among many things that we do as committee, engage the department, especially now that we're trying to respond to how the SONA will affect us as a department. I think the lack of emphasis in spearheading this process of meeting the threshold of 2% on people with disabilities. We're standing at 0.8%. We're not even half the way. So we've got to, and I'll go with that suggestion that the research unit has put here, and Adam, thank you very much for guiding us. It's quite a very good asset in the tool. Because here, if we can suggest that we ring fence in some way, some position at senior level to accommodate people, so that competition, yes, is fair and should be encouraged. But sometimes we find it hard to have that fair comparison, fair competition, where it may be unfair because some disabilities differ from the other disabilities. And also, there are positions where you don't need physical labor. All you need is areas of bringing specialized service. So I think we need to ensure that we take that seriously, because right now I don't think we're pushing enough in our way of engaging the department to practicalize this. The other one is the Learning Academy. I would like us to visit the Learning Academy so that we can see for ourselves, especially now that it has also been expanded to include other units or other areas that were not there, immigration and other areas. So we should go and just see, and also look at the people that are training the others. So whether those who are training others are in fact equipped to train those that they are training, and what are the gaps. The last one, Chair, but the rest has been covered by my colleagues. And it is actually captured here, is the area of retaining scarce skills, especially in the GPW. It has been suggest that we engage urgently DPSA, sort of a meeting with them, sit and engage. Then we can see how best we can synchronize our ideas, then confront this head on, in ensuring that we do have these skills. Otherwise, what is going to happen when we roll out the smart ID card, we'll find that there are gaps. In fact, there might be serious delays and serious challenges because some people might leave and go to the private sector in the middle of the process. So I would suggest that we do look into that.
Thank you for the questions. Yes, okay, the President did mention specifically the National Development Plan and how all the initiatives of government needed to be in line with the National Development Plan. Some of the stuff I've read, also there are specific accords that emerged out of the National Development Plan relating to employment and to education. So I can amend this document and then resend it. I can make this specific mention of the National Development Plan and things that are related to this. I have got that information. The accords also mention the need to link the Departments of Labour and Economic Development and the intergovernmental for cooperation and methods for doing that, so I can incorporate that too. In terms of the spreadsheet on performance progress monitoring, what we usually do is we incorporate these key points as part of the strategic plan of the committee. So the State of the Nation address always has that, but where we have fallen behind this historically with all committees is monitoring progress and actually monitoring that strategic plan. So we need to kind of make sure that the strategic plan becomes more central to the work of the committee, and we make sure that there's a constant checking back. Are we sticking with the things that we prioritized in the beginning of the year? And then also monitoring our own progress in terms of what we've monitored this year versus previous years. The two sets of information on employment from the Macintosh, first of all, they're two different years. The top information, the first paragraph is for 2012, and the second is for 2011, just because there's not comparable data available. But the 55% of funded positions, basically those are just the ones that they get money for specifically for full-time positions. So they only got, of all the full-time positions they wanted, they only got just over half the amount of money they needed. So obviously they have to prioritize. And the second one from 2011, as a way to kind of circumvent the lack of funding for positions, they tend to recruit part-time consultants as opposed to full-time positions. So that's why that 30% there is additional to the funded posts. So that 2011 number there of 10,000 posts is what those are the 10,000 posts that were funded. And as a way of kind of getting more positions than the ones that are funded, they recruited a significant amount of contract workers. So it's a kind of a way of circumventing budget shortages in recruitment. The other issue, just the visiting on the Learning Academy, that's a good idea, but I think the new areas that they're aiming to research on are only likely to be implemented later in the year. So if we do that, perhaps later in the year. The trafficking and then National Prosecuting Authority, I don't think there was specific mention in the speech, but it's part of our priorities anyway, hey? Oh, it's in the NDP, okay. So it was in the National Development Plan. Other than that, I think the rest are all just recommendations. Thanks for the fixing of the typos. Yeah, we'll have it edited and include the recommendations, and then the research, I'll just send out the document to all members.
Another
person?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think what you have raised earlier on in terms of the NDP is actually the strength of the speech of the president. That was the framework he actually placed his speech under. And without that, we are unable to actually come up with what has to be done. If you look what the NDP is, most of these things that are here are actually under the NDP. If you look at the six pillars of the NDP, within the NDP, the issues of education, the issues of social cohesion, building capabilities, active citizenry, all those, they are part of the NDP. So I think if we can, what we need, our approach should be to just say, where is the NDP and how do we fit in as Home Affairs in that? And how do we then turn the way? Because I think that is a national plan. Because if we can have that approach, all of us as departments, we're going to move one direction, all of us, rather than us having some of the things there and then ultimately missing out on the plan itself. But the other important thing is for us, Chair, to actually request the department to come and present to us what they've done in terms of what the president had said last year, so that we are able to then match in what has been said this year. So I think that would help us to then move forward and plan in accordance to say what actually we do want to see happening in the department out of the SONA statement. Thank you, Chair.
No more input? Honourable McIntosh?
I would just like to ask the researcher on his gender issues, and maybe he's not informed enough, but the President said he wanted to support legislation to criminalise certain elements of gender equity. Has the researcher applied his mind to what that possible development's impact will be on the department?
Yeah, on the issue of what that was raised by an honourable debater of the spreadsheet. We did have a business plan, I'm sure, last year.
Mm.
I think that is one of the things that we need to have a meeting as a committee and see what we've achieved, what we haven't achieved. So that when we do the this year's business plan, we move from there. Honorable Bosman? I think
there was just one question. The criminalizing of certain aspects of gender equity, it was a proposal. I haven't seen any draft legislation yet or submissions. I'm not sure. I haven't seen any of the political party inputs on this yet, but it's a proposed legislation that hasn't been tabled yet, so I'm not sure what it would include.
Yeah, one other thing that we haven't dealt with is the issue of this prevention and combating of trafficking of people. I think we will sometime also need to have a discussion on that. It's on the program. Okay. Oh, now that it's in the program, it's fine. Since we do not have any more hands, it seems we've come to the end of our input on the SONA. But maybe we're going to have a Friday where we're going to discuss the business plan and as to where are we moving, which way we're going as a portfolio committee. And also, we've made the recommendations, I'm sure, in 2011 through the BRR we need to check how far, as a portfolio committee, so how far has the department, you know, done in discussing some of the recommendations that we made 2011 before we can deal with the 2012 one. Because I think the 2012 one, we need to push the department to implement what we've recommended in the BRR of last year. Adam, you wanted to say something? Since we do not have any more hands, honorable members, we've come to the end of our meeting. Yeah. We have a correspondence from the commissioner, is it the commissioner or, yeah, for Minister of Foreign Affairs of Uganda. We're going to have a committee from Uganda, I think, that is dealing with the same issues that we deal with regard to the elections and the Electoral Act. They will want to come and visit the country and have a meeting with us. So we are in agreement that they can come and visit us so that we interact with them, are we? Because we need to respond according to what Ed is saying, that we need to respond to say whether we agree or Honorable De Freitas.
Thank you, Chair. I think we should agree, but may I suggest that we also take the opportunity of using their visit to learn from them. There may be things that we can learn from them, so perhaps in our response that we suggest that we take advantage of this opportunity. Also, if I may also suggest, is that the last time, I think it was Botswana that came to visit us, and I sense that it was like a rush job. You know, they would kind of squeeze them in, and I don't think it's fair on them and on us. I think I would like to suggest that whatever date is planned, that we know in advance, that we give them real proper time, and get to know them perhaps a little bit better, maybe incorporate a lunch, whatever the case is. Make them feel welcome, because when we are visiting other countries, that's what we would like. And I think it's a fair thing to do, and the fact that they're from the African continent, I think, is even more important. So I'd like to suggest that we learn from them as well. I'm sure they've got many questions. And then my third point is that we then ask the IEC or representative of the IEC to be in on this meeting, unless they're arranging a separate meeting with them, because obviously it looks like they're focusing on the election-related matters. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Deputy. Yeah, the Botswana delegation was not actually properly handled. It was rush. You know, they were moving like, hey. Yeah, it was not right. I think Eddie has noted all those.
We can also learn from how easy I mean through all the foreigners out of the country.
we will see what we want from their input. Then we will take what is good from them. Because they will also, you know, take what is good, what they think is good from us. So, I'm sure we've come to the end of our meeting. Honourable members, thank you for the meeting you
attend. Send me a copy of it, that's all. Yeah, I'll be prepared, because I didn't have time to prepare for the last committee as well, and then for the last meeting.
Do you get a copy of the document?
Okay, that's just one.
Yeah.
So I just want to
add
a typo before the email subject to the main.
Great. And that's the only document you have, right?
For today.
For today. Thank you.
I haven't heard of anything like that recently. Is it new?
Hey.
How are you? I can look into
the most important question.
Oh, what happened? Hold on. No, fine.
How to in a sense, the difference in the U.S., well, I mean, some of them are legal immigrants, and some of them are legal refugees. No, I mean, like the Eritreans, the Cubans, but the Mexicans are not technically refugees. They're economic migrants. And like Rubio had some very interesting suggestions on how the U.S. can kind of legitimize 11 million immigrants.
Wow. Yeah. They've always been quite accommodating. They have a huge percentage of
immigrants. I don't think in America's been immigrants. I mean, it's...
But now they've told that the Mexican government has supported a lot of, like, I think what we heard last week in the policy debate was the research of migration that we said that the amount of money that they spent on it, there wasn't actually a decrease in the amount of money.
No, I'm not talking about that.
Yeah.
No, I'm not talking about preventing them. It's how do you legitimize people already in your country?
Yes, no, I understand. I'm saying basically the initiatives that they've used before haven't been effective, and you have to try something different.
Well, I mean, the argument is that the U.S. is the easiest country in the world to get into illegally, and the most difficult in the world to get into illegally.
I'm looking at it.
Just talk about what Rubio's immigration system, the title they were giving it.
Everyone thinks he's going to run for president someday. So, yeah, he's a favorite. So keep your eyes on him. He's a presidential hopeful, I think.
Rubio?
Yeah.
Well, you can have an African American baby. You can certainly have a Hispanic.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think, I mean, he would be popular because of that, and he does a lot of work. He's one of those active senators, so that's always nice to see. But yeah, on the news programs back home, they always speculate that he'll run.
Of course, Obama is not an African American. He's actually immigrant. His wife's an African American. Mm.
How would you say that? Why?
Because he's not descended from slaves.
Okay, that's true.
There's a difference. Mm-hmm. In a sense, if you're Afro-American, you've had a history through slavery.
It depends on how you apply the term, though.
Sure, but the point is his father was a free Kenyan who impregnated an American woman and married her.
It's
great that he got what he got. But I was at the table, Andrew Young speaking. Do you remember Andrew Young? Well, he's an American. He was mayor of Atlanta, black American, and he's engaged with South Africa since 1974. There was a tennis player called Arthur Ashe.
Okay.
Interesting.
And anyway, he said in this address in Atlanta to us, he said one of his disappointments as a guy from the South is that Obama had never lived with his son. And the implication from the way he talked was that he would have had a better understanding of black-white relations.
Right, so there's more tension in them than in Southern states.
And they worked it out.
Right, oh, that's true. Yeah. What were you doing there? Was just you visiting your children?
No, I went to have breakfast with President Obama. I went to the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington.
Oh, wonderful.
There were, unfortunately, 3,500 other people.
You didn't get to chat to him directly.
It was very interesting. I mean, interacts with a lot of senators and congressmen.
This is like an international faith-based initiative.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Started by General Eisenhower 60 years ago. And nobody misses it. Anybody who's somebody in U.S. politics is there.
Okay, so you didn't really even have to be that religious.
Well, you don't necessarily need to be religious. You just got to fear God, I suppose. That's quite a broad spectrum. No, but that immigrant stuff is interesting.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, we see you next Tuesday.
It's great to meet both of you. Thank you. It was a very interesting meeting. It was my first one with PMG. I'm a student in the States, so that's why I'm listening in on their talks about America. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just here for a few months helping out at PMG.
It would have been nice, but I'm too slow.
And Zuma had the State of the Nation address on Valentine's Day, so
yeah, but
you were busy with other things.
But Butcher and Hicks didn't miss the opportunity.
No, he didn't
have the
call.
Have a good afternoon. Bye.
An empty Valentine. What is it? Oh. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. think that could change. What are you watching?
Thank you. Yeah, I just lost my hair. It's like really, I'm not expecting it at all. I'm like, I should have. Everyone else this morning, I was like, wow, everyone's dressed with these sweaters and stuff. Like, why? Okay, I'll see you later. Thank you.
Minimum.
Hi.
Are you well?
I'm good. How are you?
I haven't seen you for a couple of days. I'm fine. Are you busy?
Yeah, it seems very busy.
Okay.
I also have chocolate as well.
Like it's in such a way that maybe she could not, you know.
she's not, yeah, because we found out she's not even responsible. We are taking her to the boarding school next year. Yes, so that she can learn to be responsible.
Yeah.
Yes.
My
sister says, yeah. If you think she's a sweet girl, she's a sweet girl. Yeah. She's a sweet girl. Yeah. She's 12
already.
Yes. And then you made
it through the
hardest part. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This is when I said, my sister says that she's so sweet on here. You know, there's lots of things that she can, you know, she can do it. She must go to the boarding school.
Just
stay
that way.
Yes.
Stay that way.
She could be
stupid. Well, I hope you
Okay. Can I make a cell phone call you?
Just use that one, Jack. That phone on that room.
Hello.
Oh, you're going to use. Okay, sure.
Thank you.